The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com. The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello and welcome to the Mall Over podcast. God's sake, Ben, you do it. Just do the intro, mate. Just do the intro.
Put me under pressure now, Doug. Welcome to the local podcast with news, views, and other stuff about rugby with a West Country accent.
There you go. So I've bailed out on the intro already. I'm going to be hosting today because Tubbsy's eating, or he'll be eating something, won't he?
That's not birthday cake. Yeah. Birthday cake, wasn't it? Stuffing our face.
Birthday cake made of bacon. And Phil's out probably entertaining a housewife somewhere. So it's just me and Ben from the regulars. So how you doing, Ben?
I'm good, thanks, mate.
Why don't you tell us all about your shoulder again? That was really interesting.
Oh, yeah, I've got a trapped nerve in my shoulder, which means I'm like...
I was only joking, mate. No one cares.
Yeah. Thanks, man.
There's Ben being the nicest man in Cornish rugby podcasting, even with a bad shoulder. But we thought we haven't podcasted for a while because 50% of the podcast hate rugby now, and the other 50% obviously have better things to do in the middle of summer in one of Great Britain's most naturally beautiful places. So don't rag us too hard for not doing podcasts. There's other stuff to be getting on with. But we're back this week and we're joined by a couple of the regulars from our secret squirrel WhatsApp group. Not WhatsApp, is it? For some reason, we refuse to go that far and we stay on Twitter. But the bunch of degenerates, we've got one from each side for the final. So we've got Duncan Keane from Leicester side. How are you going, Duncan?
Hi, Dougie. Yeah, I'm doing good. Apologies to the regular listeners for a new voice. I know it always goes down a little bit. Doesn't always go down good, but good to be on. Think,
to be honest, wearing a very good sort of mid-2000s Leicester replica.
2001.
Yeah, beautiful, with a Vauxhall sponsorship. And we're joined by a stalwart Mall Over listener, one of probably the first listeners we ever got. A man who has taken probably more stick on WhatsApp, Facebook, Twitter, and podcasts over the last 5 years than anyone other than Tubbs, I guess. James, how are you going?
Very well, thank you very much. Slightly disturbed by Ben Tiger, who's bad, but there you go, doing all right.
Just do us a favour and drop your mic stalk a bit closer to your mouth so we can...
There you go. Amateur hour, you see. Is it not working?
Don't worry, mate. Don't worry. Can't all be the egg chasers.
There you go.
The reason we've got you on is because, well, Ben, did you even watch the final?
Yeah, I did, yeah. Do you know what I did, though? I watched it on catch-up. I was half hour behind, so I just skipped over all the referee chat, all the scrum setups.
You watched the game in like 20 minutes.
Yeah, took less than an hour.
Yeah, brilliant. And I was working on the British Superbikes, so I was kind of watching it out of half of one eye. So we thought we'd get some supporters of the game on. Now, obviously, my feelings on both sides are pretty clear as a Northampton Saints fan. I wouldn't say that I have a disliking for Leicester because it's a bit like being a Man City fan. being a Leicester fan, like being a Northampton fan compared to United? Because although Leicester are, although City are winning at the moment, they'll always be the little brother of Premiership football. And Northampton and Leicester are a bit like that. Northampton are the little brother of Leicester. As much as we like to think that it's a huge rivalry, the actual results are unquestionable, really. So while I don't particularly enjoy Leicester, I can't begrudge them the success. Whereas with Saracens, we all know my feelings on that. So what I think we should do is, I think we should first ask you about, you know, how was the day you both went? It was a good atmosphere, I guess. Twickenham, always good on finals day. Did you meet up?
No. James had his son with him. I'm sort of met Matt, who also is in our group. He flicked the V's at me. I flicked the V's back at him. and we had a short conversation. But yeah, that was that. And yeah, no, James, we had a few messages, quite a lot of messages in the build up to it, about the organisation and Premier Rugby and their pricing and all things like that we do agree on.
Why don't you just let us know about that. I had a chat with James at the semi final, and you were very very not happy with the pricing structure.
Yeah, it just seemed. I know. I think Paul Morgan tried to counter my counter my tweet about it quite quickly, but it just felt that £99, no concessions for quite a lot of the seats seemed like a very just an expensive day out. Really, and sort of forgetting kind of part, the purpose of bringing the rugby family together for an end of season party and final, which I thought was kind of the point of having the playoff. One of the points of having the playoff. And, you know, there were other, you know, there's other four categories of pricing, so you didn't have to spend £99. But the no concession bit does annoy me. You know, it kind of denies the opportunity for most families to sort of sit together. I think it's £101.
There was no concessions on the side seats, so the £99 ones. There were concessions in the other areas. So you could take, so the people sat in front of me was a dad and his daughter. His seat was £72, which was the same I paid, and his daughter's was £20. So the family thing, they could just about manage it if they were fans of the team, but it's not like it was. I mean, people are comparing the attendances with 10 years ago. 10 years ago, you could buy an adult ticket for £25 and a kid's ticket for probably a tenner.
I seem to remember for Saracens Northampton in the glorious year that we won the Premiership, my dad got a ticket in the northwest corner for a tenner.
Yeah.
And that, if you look back at that game, it was absolutely heaving, Twickenham was. I mean, James, have you been to every final?
Every final Saracens have been in, yeah.
And is this?
And it was, there was noticeable gaps this time. It's a difficult game to sell when it's, you only find out there's participants the week before, and that makes a big difference to whether people want to attend some of it. And Saracens don't travel in the largest numbers. Leicester, there's certainly a lot more Leicester fans there than Saracens. We made ourselves heard, but that typical thing, it's always quite loud for you. If you're in the Saracens area, it feels quite loud. I suspect it didn't sound that loud when you're dominated by the Leicester crowd.
Well, and when you've only got one song as well, which is monotonously shouting Saris as loud
absolutely.
As you can.
But it does feel like Tigers have exactly the same thing. You just replace the word Saris for Tigers in the same slight degree of monotony. It wasn't a Quinn's sing-along sort of session, but it was good. I mean, I think, you know, the atmosphere is great. It was great outside. There's a lot of activities outside for families. We had both teams arrived. That was great. So welcoming both teams in. Usual guard of honour for Saracens. Leicester had a load of people cheering and shouting when their coach arrived. It's good. You know, there's a really nice build-up to it.
From the Leicester sort of fans' end, I think it was the best atmosphere we've had for ages. I think our big games this year, Leinster at home, Northampton at home, and then this one in the knockout games, none of those have sold out. which, you know, all would have sold out years ago. But the actual atmosphere, the way the fans were supporting the team, is way better. And I think, obviously, we'd got a bit used to, you know, 9 finals in a year and in a row, sorry, and all of that. We got used to going and winning, not always winning, but used to going all the time. And I think there's been a real hunger built up with lockdown and everything as well. And there was, yeah, a lot more sort of support, I think, from the Leicester fans than in some previous finals where people sort of sit on their hands and just wait and see what happens.
Yeah. I mean, I think we'll move on from this, just conscious of time, but I think we might circle back to this at the end if we get time, just to see if there's any way we can improve or Premiership Rugby can improve. I've got a number of things that I think they could do overnight that would improve it, but we'll get on to the actual game. I mean, I don't think it was ever going to be anything but a game for Ben Eustace, was it?
I enjoyed it. Yeah, I thought it was a really good game. You know, there was a lot of kicking in it, but there was some pretty aimless kicking, but there was some pretty good kicking as well.
I find the kicking stuff fascinating. When you're watching with no volume on, as I was, and you're watching these kicking battles develop, and you can see the territory just ebbing and flowing. And it's intriguing, like when you don't have the voices in the background saying, oh, kick, another kick, and they're all making fun of the kick, and you're watching Saracens and the relentless incremental 5-yard gains, every kick, and then they're on the halfway line, and then Leicester would turn them over. And to me, that's rugby. 56-47 is not rugby to me. That's pass ball.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, both sides defended really well. It wasn't that there was a complete lack of attacking rugby. It was just two really good defences. And, you know, I think Phil made the point on Twitter, which was pretty much summed the game up, that Leicester defended so well and they didn't let Saracens, like big ball carriers, just wear them down. You know, usually it only takes them a few phases of those really heavy carries and it picks a few holes in the defense. And you know, Leicester, well, you know, it's a Sinfield defense, isn't it? And it was really effective. I think you got to say,
do we have a Sinfield defense yet though, Duncan? Because he's only been there a year, right?
Yeah, it's only been a year. Yeah, I think it's improved.
Is it a Sinfield defence or is it a defence coached by Sinfield in the mould of their head coach?
Yeah, well, in the mould of Borthwick, definitely. Absolutely.
Well, I would say it's taking on the sort of personality of Sinfield, you know.
Are you conflating hard work with Northern grit? are you being a little bit...
It's doggingness. I mean, it was relentless. I mean, both defences were very, very good, but it's particularly impressive, Leicester defence. If you look, you know, Saracens, the kicking tactic that they use does normally gain them more and more territory and pressure. And then they cut loose in the middle third of the pitch. And about 60 minutes in. It's quite a long time into the match before we actually even got into the 22. But there have been loads of flashes of sort of exciting play in that middle third where we seem to be making progress. But then Leicester just stood firm, or we turned it over, or, you know, there was just that frustration. And it looked really exciting in the middle bit, but just not with the degree. We didn't get over the line. I mean, we got within 5 metres and then Barnsley stopped us, literally stopped us.
Here we go. We're going to get on the rest already, are we? Here we go.
No. He unfortunately got in the way.
Yeah, I think from what I could see, in much the same way that the NFL has coaching trees, I think that coaching tree from Saracens has branched out. And you can see that defensive intensity that Leicester play with that has been a hallmark of Saracens for probably a decade. The swarming nature of when a ball goes loose, it's not like most teams where one player spots it and is on it. There's 3, 4, 5 players around the ball. They're competing to you know, counter ruck over there, the aggression was pretty mind blowing. Now, I think largely something that went missing in the build up to this game, as they sort of tried to ham up the redemption story of Saracens and the redemption stories of both sides. I think I've not heard a lot, and maybe it's because I haven't been paying attention, but I certainly didn't hear a lot about the Tom Young's angle to it all and the emotion that those guys were playing with for Tom Young.
I think in particular in the semi-final, that was a big issue, particularly I think it was sort of unthinkable to lose the semi-final in that week with what had happened. And I think the players almost bottled it early on due to the emotion, and they were so emotional on the pitch. I think they handled the emotions better in the final. I think obviously it's been another week. They've had a victory, you know, it's much more thinkable to lose a final than it is to lose a semi-final when you've been top of the table the whole year. And when Tom Youngs has literally asked you to do one thing, which is smash the Saints, which is what he said when they had him on the pitch. When they presented him with the thing earlier in the season, they had him on the pitch and he said, smash the Saints. So I think, you know, there was a lot. That was a really big factor in the semi-final. I think in the final, it was a bit of a factor, you know, all these things do play, you know, in the emotions. And it was certainly one of the most emotional performances I think the last 2 weeks we've produced for a very long time. And I think that, yeah, that was definitely a factor.
Just so much flux. Obviously, the Tom Young thing, then there's the Ellis Genge leaving, Ford leaving, a group of young players proving themselves to Leicester fans that they're up there with one of their best teams ever, you know.
Yeah, I saw a quote today from Ellis Genge, and I don't know exactly when he said this was said to him, but he said that Matt Smith and Brett Deacon said that one of the things that sort of pleased him the most in the last week was they told him he was a proper tiger. So their definition of a proper tiger is now. It's not all the other stuff he's done before. You know, it's leading the team to a trophy. And well, I tend to agree with them. When he said he was going, when Ford said he was going, my attitude to both was, right, well, we'll part that because we're top of the table, we're doing really well, and make it the last dance, you know, win and all's forgiven. So all's forgiven, you know, I'm sure they don't give a shit what I think, but as far as I'm concerned, they did need the win. Maybe after the semi-final, that was so important. I was moving towards going away from that position and just being happy enough with them anyway. But yeah, now totally, you know, they'll be welcome. But they would have been welcomed back well anyway by people who aren't twats like me. But I think there is quite a core of Leicester fans who are like that Matt Smith, Brett Deacon kind of person who want you to show what you can do.
My granddad was certainly one of them. I know that much. James, can you
who are you offending most there?
can you sort of talk to the emotions that, you know, surrounded Saracens coming into the game? Was there, I mean, how did you feel about the whole redemption arc? I thought it was a nonsense, to be honest. But
yeah, I mean, it's difficult because it's a bit England New Zealand World Cup thing. The semi-final was such an emotional high, and beating Quins, and there was a bit, probably a deeper groove of passion around the semi-final than there was about Leicester. You know, Leicester have been top of the table throughout the year. No one can argue their place in the final. You know, they were exceptional all year. Beating Quins, I think, really mattered. Certainly, I don't think the players in the final performed anywhere. And I think McCall and Owen Farrell have acknowledged this. Didn't play anywhere near the same level of intensity and performance that they put in the semi-final. It was something just a little bit off, that extra 5% they talk about, just wasn't perhaps there. Billy Vunipola perhaps aside, that, you know, certainly Alan Davis had a fantastic semi-final and just wasn't on his game as much as you'd like in the final. And that was before the, you know, the yellow or whatever. So, you know, I think we've certainly wanted it coming back from the Championship. You know, we were there, not on performance. Leicester were bottom because they were rubbish. That, you know, that was a bigger turnaround. You know, we were there because we'd been found cheating. So coming back from the playing a year out in the Championship,
you just acknowledge that you were cheating.
That is exactly what's been found. Yes.
That's taken 4 years.
You like 4 years to answer that question. And then the and I think, you know, it is quite a different team. There's a different makeup on the team than it was then when we last played in the final. You know, it was amazing being back. I don't think at the start of the season that was where we were. Well, perhaps I'm sure Mark McCall was targeting it, but I didn't think we'd get to the final.
Well, he said he wasn't, wouldn't he? He this is what I think a lot of us don't buy. McCall said that, oh, no one would believe, you know, that we'd be there the next year. How can you have Mauro Itoje and Owen Farrell in your squad and not be targeting to make the final? Like, surely everyone thought Saracens were going to be in the final at the start of the season.
Coach speak, isn't it? Let's be honest.
Yeah, I mean, certainly some, you know, some of the pundits have tipped them to get to the final, but I think, you know, whether you believe it or not, I think there's a modesty about it having coming back from the Championship. We didn't have our own way on all those games in the Championship. You know, it took quite a readjustment in the squad, a push. The England internationals didn't have a great year last year playing for England. You know, there's a confidence that they need to gain back and togetherness, which they, you know, it has been pretty amazing as the club has gained sponsors, some massive sponsorship deals again, or partnership deals, and that has, there's been a recovery in the club and a sort of a pride come back within the club. It's a long road back for some people, I'm sure. I was delighted to see them back in the final. I thought we'd play better than we did.
Ben?
Yeah, I think James is right. I think Leicester just were maybe 5% more on it for the whole game. And Saracens two or three times looked in danger of breaking loose and they never did. You highlight where Barnes sort of took the wrong line and got in the way, but, you know, just a couple of times little things happened that put them off their stride. And I think Leicester were, you know, for that reason, the better team. I think how I feel about Saracens at the moment is in Lord of the Rings, when Sauron gets defeated the first time and he kind of disappears, but he's still around, causes a bit of trouble, but he's still trying to get back to his full power. And I kind of feel that's how Saracens are at the moment. They're not, you know, they're still a good side that could beat anyone on the day, but they haven't quite replaced a few of those players that have gone. You know, I don't think they've replaced Spencer and Wigglesworth with players of that quality. And, you know, the centres don't seem to be quite set as a unit yet. They haven't replaced Brad Barrett. And you know, some of the, maybe the front row options, if Mako's not playing, aren't quite as strong. And, you know, they're not quite back as they were. And whether that's because they can't be, because they can't afford to anymore, or they just need to find some new young players to come through, I'm not sure. I know what you think, Doug.
let's let James have a say at it.
I think it's interesting starting. I think actually it might be slightly similar to Leicester. That was the first time that 23 had played together. You know, there's no settled, there's not really not a degree of settled side at all. I was one of those stats when you see it and you think, surely we've played that before.
Yeah, it was exactly the same for Leicester. It was the first time this season that 23 had played.
I mean, the only points that let, you know, Leicester's two tries came when we were down a player and that momentum shift. You know, so defence is on top. You know, they're basically outside. When it was 15-15, there were no tries. And it took a Billy Burns scuffed kick, who cares, it went over, to win it. There was so little between the sides in that respect. But the turnover stats say different. You know, Leicester had many more turnovers from us. And that's where our attacking play fell down on that Leicester sword.
You don't really expect Saracens to struggle at the breakdown either, do you? You don't often see them turned over with that regularity. And I wonder why that was. Could you say that potentially there was... I mean, I don't know the ins and outs of second row play, but is Swinson a bit more of a menace around the rucks than Ezekwe? Because they didn't have this issue against Quinns, did they? And Will Evans was just a non-entity against them.
Yeah, it's a different figure. I mean, they're very sort of, they look different figures, aren't they? Sort of between the two. It's almost, perhaps it's why we've got Tizard coming next year from Quinn, because there's another sort of big physical presence in that second row.
Tight headlock. So you played with you played with two loose headlocks.
Yes. It's also a factor of not winning the collisions like Saracens are used to as well. You know, they're used to really being on the front foot. You know, it's easier to secure your ball then perhaps if you've got that extra yard or two through contact. Whereas
I guess when you're running at Genge, Liebenberg, Visa, Chesham.
Yeah,
Martin when he comes on as well. Yeah.
I definitely put the sort of the pro towards the Leicester defence rather than, you know, the Leicester play, because that's, you know, some amazing attacking play. You know, both sides are always quite borderline with the laws. You know, looking, there's some pretty cheeky challenges going in, but you know, you play to the ref and you play hard, and it was successful for Leicester.
I mean, we could talk about the. I mean, let's just get it out there. We've got 5 minutes left on our Zoom call. We will go again afterwards, and I will edit it, I think. But can we get the yellow card chat out of the way in 5 minutes and 40 seconds? Because,
yeah, for me, yeah, go on.
Alid Davies, that is something that needs to be looked at around small dudes hitting big dudes with their shoulder and no one batting an eyelid.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly the way I see it. I think it's sort of what has happened by a lot of scrum halves over the season and over the years. And not just scrum halves, but small players. I mean, Matt Scott later in the game was a smaller player who also made a high tackle and got a yellow card. But I think Davies has got a little bit of a habit for it as well.
Yeah, I mean, it was a chicken wing and it hit him straight in the boat.
Yeah, but, you know, and I think it was clearly a wrong decision, but I mean, at the time I was absolutely fuming, and I still, you know, if I was a neutral, I'd want it to be a red card. But as a Leicester fan, we've won a final before with a red card against the opposition, and as long as we win, I'm delighted when it isn't a red card, because then people won't talk about it for the next 10 years. They'll talk about the Freddie Burns drop goal. They won't talk about, you won because there was a red card. You know,
I am inclined to agree with that, and you know, I was going to say that. The fact that you won sort of rendered that whole thing a bit moot, really. But it's just a mockery. And like, so I mentioned to you in the build-up to this, I have a thought about it. And I think that there's an edict out about refereeing during the regular season and regular refereeing during the postseason, in much the same way that the NBA is a fairly tippy-tappy league until you get into the playoffs, and then it's street basketball, elbows, anything goes. Same with hockey, the NHL. You play in the playoffs, it's more brutal. The NFL is exactly the same. You don't get the tippy-tappy pass interference. People get hit harder. They, you know, and the refs let it slide because the intensity is obviously ramped up, so there's more margin for error. However, if you've made a thing about head contacts being and behaviours changing and being quite sanctimonious about it, you can't decide that it doesn't count for 3 games a year. And it feels like that's what's happened here.
I mean, it's difficult. You've got sort of Wayne Barnes, you know, it's his 10th final. Guy sort of, you know, guys over all the other referees. And last week in the semi-final, another very experienced referee. And there were some pretty tasty hits in the semi-final against Quinns as well, on both sides, that sort of, some of which were picked up social media on going both ways, frankly, that, you know, and whether you want 15v15 as a fan, you want to see, there is that more intensity about the game. And if you've got the two top referees effectively doing the last two games and they both referee that way, it does feel like slightly different.
During the season, do they?
We're not aware of their interpretation. So something of the fans. So the fans, we don't understand because we don't appear to be privy to something that they are about how it's but being
you, you can't. You just can't decide that rugby doesn't care about the lawsuits 3 games a year. Why is it okay 3 games a year? Why do we have to put up with 15 against 14 because the rest of the year it's a red card.
It's an interesting point about small people though, because it would have been felt really soft if that had been a red card. I kind of want my red cards to be proper red cards. I mean, I think
we all do. I think Ben, you'd agree, yeah, right? I don't think...
like that. I don't like that being a red card. Sort of thing.
Yeah, no. I kind of try and take the rest of the season, and I know everyone likes a bit of consistency from the referees, but I try and sort of take that out of it, and like just on those two incidents, to me, I can understand why they've been given yellow cards because of what's been going on over the last few years, but you know. In my version of rugby in my head, those two are just penalties, both of those in that game. And the ones in the semi-final were just a joke. I don't think any of them should have been a yellow card.
I could have seen Visa went in on McFarland in the Saracens 22, Saracens 5 metre actually, straight through his head, straight over, nothing given at all. Because, whether it could have been or not, but I think there is an inconsistency with how some of the calls are given. And you wonder sometimes it's whether the commentators also pick up on it. And does the TMO hear the commentators and the pundits?
I don't know if I should say or not.
Okay.
Right. I don't know where I stand on that.
There was one this weekend, and I can't remember which game it was in. It might have been in the final, where it almost seemed like nothing was going to be given and then it got picked up on the big screen. Was that the Davis one?
I think that was the Davis one, yeah.
None of those would have been it. You know, if that had been in the Mallover Invitational, next year without the TMO, none of those would have been getting picked up, would they?
Yeah, I mean, just to put a bow on it, I don't think they should have been red card. I don't think... In a perfect world, they're not red cards, but the bottom line is we've seen red cards for way, way less this year. Especially the Davies one, I think had Sarries have won that, we'd probably still be hearing about that red card or not red card.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I expect Duncan to still be tweeting about it, and his brother. I just think
probably one of the most egregious non-calls in a Premiership final ever. And the other one that Barnes actually did produce a red card for was probably the most egregious. So, but we don't talk about that one. Any more thoughts from the game? There wasn't really a lot to talk about, was there?
I think very attritional,
very, very. It was the exact script we all thought it was going to be.
Yeah. When you pick Wiggy, when Leicester pick Wiggy, then you know where they're going with the tactic. And he is the best at it. So, and up against his old team, the guy's a winger. Absolutely loved it. Loved that game is Wiggy all over. Perfect conditions for him. Strong pack, present him with lovely ball, box kick it, get that territory, control the game. It's beautiful Wiggy game. It's what we won 5 championships with him doing. It was a good tactic. And David, we played it back, but Davies is good, but Wiggy's Wiggy, and he is the best at that.
I thought it was quite fitting that the two South Africans got the tries for Leicester, because I think in terms of sort of symbolising their turnaround from being quite, not like Leicester for quite a long time. They're two very sort of throwback Leicester players, aren't they? And I think they're almost like sort of talismans for how the club's turned around. So I thought it was quite fitting they both scored. And the Visa finish was a brilliant finish. Mm. That was really well done.
I mean, it's a brilliant training move. It looked like they'd done that several times in training before. Little feint to the left and then play it off to the right, and Visa comes in, 100 miles an hour. You know, Gordon, you try and stop me when he's coming over the line. And they play it so he's up against backs. You know, so because they've got drifted right. It's a beautiful move, and I expect we'll see it a few times from other teams next year as well. Because it's clear. You know, it could be the new Leicester 5 meter, the new Exeter 5 meter tactic. You know, it's just use a massive South African Exocet missile from 5 meters out.
I think there was a couple of really impressive things with that. Obviously, the way they actually finished it with the angle he came back across and Wigglesworth with the late pass, but actually going for the decision in the first place. We'd had a 5 meter scrum on the other side of the pitch earlier, and we'd given away a penalty, rightly or wrongly, and we'd got turned over. We later on in the game we had lineouts and we didn't get them all in, and we got held up. So it was a really big decision not to go for the scrum, not to go for the line out, you know, both of which we've scored many, many tries from this year, and to go with the tap move. And, you know, from Genge, Wigglesworth, whoever called that on the pitch, that was a really good decision. It is a tactic I love. I've said many times this year, I love the set piece. I love the fact we're so strong in the set piece, but every time you do a set piece, it gives the opposition a chance to mess it up. You know, they can do whatever the fuck they like, and if the ref goes on their side, then it's a penalty against you. If you tap it and go at them with a good angle, the worst case scenario is you set up with a ruck a meter out, which is, you know, what happened. I thought that's all we were doing when Genge tapped it and ran, but then obviously there was more of a move to it. So I think keeping that one up the sleeve for the final was very sort of a Steve Borthwick and a good move.
Kind of harks to a tactic that I to this day still think second teams up and down the country should use, which is as soon as you get in the opposition 22, you just bang the ball as high as you can, because no second team fullback is ever going to catch every single bomb you put up.
Ben's not having that.
I'm telling you, I've said
that's the pride challenge.
I've tried to get off scrums my number eight to say, just let me box kick it. I'm just going to welt it as hard and as high as I can. I guarantee we'll either get another scrum or we'll score a try. Like, don't compete to catch the ball, because their fullback will fuck it up all by themselves. And it's like that with these set piece moves at the Premiership level. It's like, if we get four penalties inside on the 5 meter line, if we tap and go five times, we will score one of them. Whereas if we take the penalty or the line, or if we take the scrum or the line out, it's more of a lottery, isn't it? Especially 5 meters.
Yeah. We didn't pick him, but when we have Nadolo, what is actually the downside to just tapping and giving him the ball? Like, I know they're professional players, but you don't see him.
He's like old Naira Voro at Saints, isn't he? He's a massive man, but he's got like the mass of Jupiter.
Yeah, hindsight, a very good decision to leave him out. I think a really ballsy call again from Borthwick. You know, so many fans wanted him to be there for the scenario of it's tight and we need him to come on and score a try or whatever. But you look at the way the game went with the humidity and the ball in the air all the time and all the chasing that Potter and Porter did. And he's not doing that. He's a good kick chaser, but for 20 minutes, you know, and Porter and Potter and Ashton were just chasing.
Yeah, I think it's a no-brainer with him. I just, Saracens would have absolutely peppered him if he was on that pitch.
Running ragged, yeah. I mean, what do you think then? So compare that tactic to Saracens 75 minutes, get a penalty in front of the posts, kick it for 12 all rather than do anything else. What would you have done?
Well, if you had 9-12 down?
9-12 down, yeah.
You take the points.
Every single time, yeah. You don't lose the game if it's 12-all. They're backing their defence, aren't they? They're also, what they're doing there is they're essentially backing their defence to get a turnover penalty.
They actually kicked it very quickly as well. So Farrell, he didn't take his minute. He didn't let the clock run down. He thought, the yellow card's gone, I'm going to kick this through, and then we're going to get back on the front foot. And then obviously as it turned out, they never really got back on the front foot after that moment, but it was a huge decision. Yeah. And
it felt like momentum was with them, didn't it, Duncan? There was that, I think you've mentioned it already, the ruck that Atoje turned over, sorry, not a ruck, a maul in the you know, in the 22. And after that point, it felt like Saracens were going to swing their way. And I think taking the penalty was definitely the right option. But after that, there was just a couple of key little incidents that went Leicester's way. The key one was when that ball just bounced loose. And was it Chesham got hold of it? It
happened twice. So yeah. Freddie Burns did a little chip and chase, didn't manage to gather it himself. And either Chesham or Liefenberg gathered it. And then Saracen's defence was forcing his back and sort of out of drop goal territory. And then Ben Youngs did a box kick that actually, I mean, the crowd clearly didn't agree with it. There was an audible groan. Now, whether the groan put off the Saracens players, I'm not sure. But it bounced. And obviously, once the rugby ball's bouncing, you know, it can go anywhere. And it got recovered by, so one of them was by Chesham, the other one was by Liefenberg. Those two recoveries were, you know, absolutely crucial to
that last few minutes. I thought Saracen suddenly looked quite tired. You know, that ball went loose and Leicester reacted so much quicker. Perhaps that was, you know, what we said, they had the extra 5% on the day, or perhaps, you know, the effort of the semi-final maybe took something out of them. But I just thought Leicester, you know, were able to just get a little, maybe not even an extra gear. Maybe they were able to stay in gear, whereas Saracen sort of dropped down a little bit. Chesham's got that ability as well, isn't he? That he seems to be in the right place at the right time quite a lot. You know, and part of that is probably because he's so big and he can reach the ball. But also, you know, there's got to be some good reading of the game there.
Maybe he's got Billy's boots on. There's a niche reference. James got it. The old boots started to make me run.
Is that from like the Beano or something?
Billy D. Roy the Rovers.
Billy D. was in Roy Rovers. Yeah.
A young footballer bought a pair of boots in a charity shop because he lived with his gran. She couldn't afford new boots and they were inhabited by the spirit of Billy Dean. He used to make him... Yeah, I did incredible runs. Maybe he's got a pair of Dean Richards' old boots or something.
Maybe.
He's a bit more sprightly than Dean Richards' last few games for us. But when Dean Richards was his age, to be fair, he probably, he's got a younger brother who's bigger than him, Ollie Chesham.
Yeah, he's in the under 20s, isn't he?
20s, yeah. Yeah. He's a big, big lad.
Yeah. So let's go back then. I think we've talked enough about the game. I mean, this is already a very long podcast, and I'm missing Love Island. How can we improve this product? Because I think it's one. I don't like the playoff format anyway. I think it's a nonsense. Leicester should have won the league 3 weeks ago, and they should have been at Welford Road with the trophy in front of a packed house. Subtext to that is Saints would have won the league 3 more times than they have. The Barbarians game being on the day after the Premiership final cheapens the Barbarians, which I don't like. So my answer would be to have the two semi-finals the week after Barbarians against England, and then the week after that, the Premiership final. Gives people time to plan their final. Just has a bit more organisational time. The Barbars get a proper run out. And I think that's... I don't understand why they don't do that as it is. Ben?
How about the league winner wins the league? Then you have the playoffs, which are a domestic cup. So you win a cup for winning the playoffs. And also it determines the seedings for the top four in Europe. And in the interest of player safety, reduce the European Cup down so that only 4 English teams and limited numbers from the other countries go through.
Yes, quite complex and convoluted, and it doesn't give the Barbars their moment in the sun, which I just think they should have. I think this whole Barbarians the day after is just utter nonsense.
I mean, I strongly agree that the Barbarians the day after is a nonsense, particularly at Twickenham. It just feels like it's part of the RFU against Premier Rugby long-term war that they set up a fixture the day after to attract some people to that and to have a distraction from the Premier Rugby final. It's all part of it, goes back years, all part of that kind of thinking. If they're going to have it on that day, have it in, you know, Manchester, Newcastle. I think having it at Twickenham the day after is
So that Barbar's fixture for the England team, they call it the England 15. It's an uncapped game. So why not make it a Premiership 15, Select 15 against the Barbarians?
Yeah.
Rather than England.
Totally. Yeah. I think you want to. I don't buy tickets for the England game until I know Saracens aren't in the final. Because I can't afford to go to both games and the time and the money. And I wonder how many other people hesitate about buying them and then think it get, and then they look at the weather and think, oh, I'm not sure about it. But if you made it a special fixture on its own, I think it would just, it would make it much better. And the Premiership 15 game would be awesome. Although you'd be missing, you know, you could actually have the finalists playing that game then as well, potentially, or you have it in a separate week. But just having the semi-finals and the following week the final also I don't like it. You know, that semi-final took a lot out of Saracens. And and Duncan, it wasn't like you had an easy game the week before against Saints. But I think I wonder if it, and obviously they were both local rivalries, big time. But I wonder, they seemed something intensity out of that Saris game that they didn't quite weren't able to reach it 2 weeks in a row. But England, New Zealand, England, South Africa, like.
Mm.
Yeah, I think you're never going to get an extra week out of the international, so the unions, they're never going to go, oh, you have another week and we'll not play another international. So the way to make that fit would be to move the European final to the week in between the semi and the final. And then, okay, if you've got such a great team that you are making the European final, then fair enough, you have to go back to back. But most years, it'd actually be not an English team in that European final or an English team that hasn't made the Premiership final, maybe. So you'd have Premiership semi-final, then the next week have a European final, where you could also have a Premiership select against Barbarians that week as well, that didn't involve European finalists. And then the week after have the Premiership final, give you 2 weeks to sell the Premiership final, finish with the Premiership final and finish with final rather than finish semi-final final. I think you could do that. I mean, the European is just, you guys have given up on Europe. It did used to be like that, yeah.
Because I mean, Saracens lost to Toulon and then lost to Northampton, I think, in 1 year. We lost two finals in 2 weeks. You know, it was
great days.
We have had that two finals before.
They've had it always round. I think when they had the Premiership final before the European final, you had the problem where you'd win the Premiership final and then it wasn't your last game of the season and you weren't properly celebrating. It happened to us in 2009, we beat London Irish and then go and play Leinster the next week and lose. And, you know, certainly didn't feel like this win. But that's just the, you know, shouldn't really moan about that, is it? That's real first world problems when you're moaning about your final win, not feeling as special as other ones. Yeah.
Okay, I think we've done that to death, right? I think that was actually like a proper rugby podcast, which for us is weird. So I think we should end it quickly. We'll do what we normally do though. Duncan, have you got anything else you want to get off your chest?
Not particularly off the chest, but I'm looking forward to playing golf with Phil on Friday if he's still available. I've got that.
Don't be intimidated by his beauty.
In a diary with him. After many, many attempts to arrange golf with Russ, this time he sent me a date saying this Friday would be the best day of this week that I'm down. And then it's his daughter's birthday. So he'd obviously looked at his diary very well.
Well, he did that with me on the Mall Over Invitational. Come down a couple of days before, we'll go and play St. Enadoc. I can't come. And he's done it with the cricket as well. So he was going to come up, we were going to go and play Beaconsfield Golf Club. And now he can't, he's got to work. So fuck him and his stupid fat waist.
He's saying he's unreliable
and fat
and bold.
Yeah. James, actually Duncan, I hope you have a great day with Phil. I'm sure it'll be brilliant. He's a A lovely man.
Thank you.
Yes, so nothing really to get off my chest this week. Don't want to do anything political. That'll just get me in trouble. rugby-wise, we'll see what happens. Next year, see how they interpret those red cards next year. What sort of game are we going back to? Concussions going to 12 days. You're going to definitely miss the next.
There's going to be games cancelled. There's going to be games cancelled with players not been out, teams not been out of field, squads, smaller squads, longer concussion protocols. Games are going to get cancelled. Quite simple. But we'll probably talk about that at some point if we ever do another pod. So, Ben?
A couple of weeks ago, they had the first Royal Cornwall show in 3 years, and it was great to be back, and it was mega busy. And I think
people showing off cows.
Yep. Cows, sheep, whatever you're into.
Yeah.
Horses. Yeah.
Giant marrows.
Yeah. I didn't see any giant marrows, but he was playing for Saracens, wasn't he?
It was like the hot tubs when I went.
Oh my God. Yeah. If you want to buy a hot tub, that's the place to go. Any county show.
Yeah, it always makes me laugh. When you drive into Hull to do the rugby league along the M62 on the left, just as you're going into Hull, there's a big hot tub showroom. I don't understand how they're shifting enough to stay open in Hull.
Hot tub centre of the universe.
Yeah, unless they're subsidised. I don't know. Tell us more about the Cornwall show, Ben. Was there any food there?
Loads of food, yeah.
I'd be interested in that.
Yeah, most of the county shows are quite big food tents, and it's where I spend, I don't know, 50% of my time.
It's where people are windmilling Russ to get him away from the get him away from the pie stands.
I ran into Phil.
Not the steam tray, Russ.
I ran into Phil on the Saturday afternoon, and he has a almost encyclopedic knowledge of which stands he can go to get a free cup of Pimm's or a ham sandwich.
He's got a book.
Yeah, I think he must do, yeah. But, came away with a couple of bits of cheese and a couple of bottles of interesting stuff from the food tent. So, Tim had some cows up there and won a few prizes, so everyone was happy.
Excellent. Was Tim just randomly tackling people and turning them over as well?
Yeah, of course he was. Yeah.
Good.
Including the judge, which probably set him back a little bit.
Wouldn't be surprised if he was smashing cows either. just opposition cows. I just want to say, if you haven't watched We Own This City on Sky Atlantic yet, then you're completely mugging yourself.
Is that the new Wire?
Yes.
Yeah, I want to watch that.
It is just fantastic. It's 6 episodes, an hour long each, and it's just brilliant. So John Bernthal is brilliant. There's little cameos from people you know from The Wire and stuff that you go, oh, it's that dude. But it is just a brilliant show. So do yourselves a favour and go and watch it.
Sherwood's very good as well on BBC One.
I don't like British dramas.
Don't watch it then.
I'm not gonna. Right, chaps, I'll let you go. It's 9:30. And
Duncan hasn't really watched the final for about half an hour, so he's off to go and watch that again.
Yeah. Don't blame him.
Freddie Burns' Instagram's the other thing to watch at the moment, because he's just drinking his way around England. And he sometimes does lives and he sometimes does stories and he is on the piss, absolutely. Sometimes with the cup, usually with a few of the other players. It's very, very entertaining.
Can you imagine what Ugo has to say about him? I mean, he's brilliant, isn't it? Absolutely brilliant.
Oh, we don't need to do that.
Good luck, Freddie. Yeah. Enjoy it. If you can't enjoy doing the drop goal to win the final, what can you do? Go and have a great time.
Just the difference between Freddie Burns and Matt Fitzpatrick, who is also surgically grafted to his trophy, the US Open trophy. But rather than drinking his way around Boston. He's having a nice civil breakfast with his family.
Disappointing.
Yeah. On that note, it's been a pleasure. We'll try and get some more stuff out. I think we're going to have a little break over the summer. We might get back together for the internationals, potentially. But I think it's been several years of us doing the podcast most weeks now. I think we've reached a bit of burnout with it somewhat.
Well, as a long-term fan, I'll probably speak for I know a lot of people do listen. Thank you for all your efforts and thank you for doing it. You know, really appreciate it. It's the first one I listen to in the week. You know, really enjoy it. You know, really enjoy it. If variation with punching chat is also brilliant. Really enjoy that. That's great. That sounds great fun to record as well.
It is. It's really good fun. We may do some of those, but thanks. Your thanks have gone noticed, as yours have as well, Duncan.
I did say thanks, just not out loud.
Oh, well.
I was fully agreeing with James. So, yeah.
No, we, you know, there's not a lot of rugby to talk about for the next few weeks, so we probably won't. We might do a punch and chat. We might not. But, you know, everyone's minis are becoming slightly bigger. You know, I know the Milslet is playing cricket for Cornwall. Is that right, Ben?
Yeah, I saw a picture of him.
So that's Russ going to be up and down the country for the next 5-6 years. You know, Phil's boys are growing up and Ben's got to do his cow stuff.
Well, I think it's right. It's right to have a bit of a pause over the summer as well, and then have a bit of pre-season, and then come back fine for the new season. So
exactly, and I do think we'll probably knock out a punch and chat at some point. But for now, it might be a couple of weeks till we record again. I know we may well drop in the odd long leg podcast. That was fun to record the other night, and we'll see where we go. But James, Duncan, thanks a lot for coming in and keeping us busy. Ben, cheers, boys. Good to chat to you as always, and we'll see you soon. Go well.
Sports Social Podcast Network.